the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery. The Challenge of Transdisciplinary Science. A production of the 2012 Emerging Interfaces Awards. Episode 2, The Living Environments Laboratory.
My name is Kendra Kreutz, and I'm Associate Director for the Living Environments Laboratory. As Associate Director, I'm in charge of day-to-day operations and projects that go on in the cave. So we have a number of graduate students that work with us. We have faculty that collaborate all around campus, from the College of Engineering to the School of Library and Information Sciences. And I work with all of those people to coordinate projects, keep people together, help day-to-day operations. Now, the cave is the primary instrument that we have in the Living Environments Laboratory. It is a 9-foot, 6-inch cube that you walk into. It has a door that closes behind you, so it's a complete immersive experience in 3D virtual reality. If you can think of Star Trek and the holodeck, that's really close. You know, that's something that people use to describe the experience of walking into the cave. You wear 3D glasses, and so there are images completely surrounding you, the ceiling, the floor, and all of the sides that transport you into a different reality, essentially. It's software driven. You know, if you were watching, you know, a movie on YouTube, the way South Park looks, you know, is one sort of animation, all the way up to real good computer graphics. And so depending on how real we want things to look, our different scenarios will either be very, very abstract or very real.
My name is Kevin Ponto. I am a postdoctoral researcher in the Living Environments Laboratory. I currently work with grad students, other faculty members on collaborative projects in the cave.
The cave is a tool that provides visualization, and in particular, 3D visualization. And what has been a real interesting learning process for me since starting this job has been how people in different disciplines value and use visualization. So Patty Brennan, who's the theme leader for the Living Environments Laboratory, is both an industrial and systems engineer and a nurse. Much of her research over the last 10, 15 years has been in personal health records and how people are living at home day to day with chronic disease, and they're using lots of different tools in their home. They might have oxygen tanks, they might have blood glucose monitors, they might have, you know, even an iPad, how they're using an iPad to communicate with physicians, other caregivers, other family members about their daily health. She is really interested in furthering what home health really looks like. What are the devices of the future? What will people really do day to day about their health and how that might be different? So virtual reality allows that research to bring in a whole context of the home and the home environment. So let's think about new devices or new tools that people would use in their home for their daily health. We can mock up 100 different homes. We can have small, we can have large, we can have messy homes, we can have homes that presume people have 20 cats. And that whole variety of how people live is actually a really critical component to how devices are made, how the computer-human interaction is designed and implemented, because all of that then really helps identify whether or not people are successful using those devices and then being successful with their day-to-day health. But that's a very specific engineering approach to using virtual reality. We have other researchers who are also engineers and also industrial engineers who are really interested in physical ergonomics. They're interested in how the body moves and how moving an object, how that sort of relates on the body. So they've been using virtual reality to create different virtual scenarios and then watching people move about in space. Every month, we have an open house for the cave, and we invite researchers from all over campus to come. We talk about visualization. We talk about collaboration, what kinds of ways they might be able to use this tool in their research. And there are many people from around campus, from art history to computer science to atmospheric sciences, who use really large data sets, and they're able to visualize them on a computer screen in 2D. And then there's sort of this 3D-ish, you know, maybe they can turn an object around, but they're still looking at it on a computer screen. So this is their idea of, wow, we can get a new data set and we can really look at it in actual 3D. They can walk around this data set. They can look at things from a different perspective. And that has been very, very interesting.
So I was going to just briefly touch on some of the collaborations that we've done so far. So one of them is that we have worked with an art historian who's interested in looking at how wood grains and the effects of lighting and wood have changed over time. And so we can use the cave to try to recreate environments as they would have been seen 500 years ago, 400 years ago, the kinds of woods they would have used, the kinds of candles they would have used, the lighting conditions. That's one of them. Last December, we had an artist who did her MFA exhibition in the cave.
The art installation, I think it was the most interesting collaboration we've had to date. This artist, her name is Lisa Frank, and she was preparing for her MFA show. She came to us early in the year in February, before the cave was even installed. And her artwork is very layered. It's photograph work, but layered in a way that there's a lot of depth to it. She said, well, it's 3D-ish. You know, I remember this meeting. She said, I would really like to explore the idea of breaking apart these layers and having more of this depth and having more of this 3D effect and using the cave for this exhibit. We thought that was a really exciting idea. So we gave her the green light, and she started developing with a computer scientist this art exhibit. So it really took her vision as an artist and everything that she wanted to do and accomplish. It took the chops of Nathan Mitchell, who was the computer scientist that she worked very closely with, to really come up with the technical implementation of her artwork. The show was open for about 10 days in December, and I think saw over 800 visitors, all of whom were extremely touched by the scenery that she was able to do. Yeah, everything that she was able to create. I think that as we move forward, we'll continue to see a lot of that transdisciplinary collaboration.
Currently, the cave does immersive visuals and spatialized audio. We have been exploring the possibility of adding haptics, which are tactile feedback mechanisms. So people sometimes ask me if we would be able to create smells in virtual environments, and other researchers have explored this, and they've currently developed prototypes which can do this.
There have been developments in audio technology and speakers in particular that are directing sound in one particular direction to help you identify where it's coming from, where it's left, right, center, and even behind you. And we do have a researcher here who's visiting from Korea who has expressed some interest in looking in directed audio. Right now in the cave, it's a regular 5.1 surround sound. So there's general sounds when we're in our kitchen environment. We have the cabinet doors opening and closing, the microwave turning on and sort of activating, sort of as the whirr, you know, of the microwave. And it's, you know, it's a general sound. It's sort of coming from all around you as you're standing in the kitchen. I don't know if we're going to have enough time before he leaves and has to go back to Korea, but that would be something really fun for us to be able to explore a little bit more.
Researchers at the University of California, San Diego, have developed a technique of spatialized audio called beaming, in which they can create locationally specific sounds that they can direct and point toward people. And so this can actually give the effect of having headphones on for someone just standing in a space.
Rather than working on auxiliary things, you know, whether it's adding smell or directional sound, there is research going on right now that I think will continue in the future that is just bettering the whole experience of when you are in the cave. Right now, we do have to wear the glasses, which are 3D, and I think those will probably stay. Unfortunately, we'll never have fun contact lenses that allow us to just walk in. But we have to use other tools. We have to use wands, which is like a virtual mouse. It's what we hold in our hand to sort of point and click at objects in the cave. So the research that we have is moving away from that. It's saying, well, what other things can we use? Can we use cameras to find where the body is in space so that we can get rid of that wand? So that, like a Kinect that we use at home to play games, maybe we have it in the cave and we're able to move our arms around in space. We're able to pick up objects in the kitchen, put them in the microwave, you know, just simply by using our hands. So it gets rid of things. It starts removing the clutter of how we interact with the cave. And it's really furthering a lot of that science. The faculty and staff at the Living Environments Laboratory are really dedicated to the mission of bringing science to Wisconsin and to everyone in Wisconsin. From the get-go, Patty Brennan said, let's open it up for public tours. And we weren't exactly sure how we were going to facilitate this. The building is locked at some entrances, so we figured out a way to have a lot of us here to help escort people down to the lab so that they can see it. And once a month, we do open our doors for an hour. We take reservations on our website and people sign up. And there's an overwhelming response every month. We take people down and we show them some of the fun stuff that we're working on. We have a galaxy map, outer space in the solar system that they can go through, and what we call a highly interactable kitchen, meaning we go into the kitchen and most of the stuff in the kitchen is stuff that you can pick up and throw around the place. So people have a lot of fun moving around those environments, learning about the science that we have going on, seeing what that 3D virtual reality really looks like. The public tours are held on Saturdays, mostly the first Saturday of the month. Sometimes it moves around, so the best thing is to check the website. What virtual reality means and what it can provide to anyone's research is very personalized and very different. The way people want to see 3D data sets is determined by the kinds of things that they're doing. So is someone working on cells or viruses or molecules that are so small that by being able to make them really large and have a presence in space that is really unreasonable, you know, a virus that can be 6 feet tall, that we can stand through and sort of stand around, that would be an application that would really only work for one particular person. What if we wanted a really, really big space? What if we were civil engineers and we were creating an enormous building or a new concert hall or a new space in general? And we really wanted to see, well, what does it feel like to be a very small person sitting in just this one area of this very large opening or egress in a particular building? That can be experienced in the cave. You can load the data set of a building. And you can be yourself, walk into that front door, and really understand what that space feels like, because you are standing in a space that's larger than life that you would not be able to experience by sitting at a computer, by even looking at it on a projection screen, or by, you know, just closing your eyes and trying to imagine it. When people really want to explore spaces that are large, things that are small, or even really large, complex data sets, you know, where are the connections in the data? It's not always obvious right away, but having a different visualization experience about it will help inform different people from different places.
Virtual reality systems generally have kind of two components, and you could look at them as an immersive system, so the idea that you have graphics all around you, and you can also look at them as a system to make presence. In the second example of this idea of having presence, we can transport people into other environments. When you can take somebody and put them in another environment, you can now analyze things like behavior. We can now put people in environments that potentially we couldn't put them in because they're dangerous, because they're impossible to get to.
Or they haven't been built yet.
They haven't been built yet, yeah. And you could have somebody now walk through, if they're an architect, you can walk through a building that you haven't built, and you can catch things before you build them. You can catch the fact that, oh, this light switch is too low. Let's move it up before you build that building and have to go back and fix these things. Industries that have heavily invested in VR are industries such as aerospace, so that they can build an airplane and find all the faults with it before they actually mass produce it. The oil industry, so that they can immersively visualize their data and try to understand how do we actually drill to this oil without disrupting all these other things surrounding it. The military has been heavily invested in VR for the simulation aspects. Or how can we train soldiers for dangerous situations without actually having to put them in danger?
So then the other half of that, presence, was your second example.
Yes.
And the first example was?
Would be immersion. The idea of immersion would be that we could walk through a data set. What extra insights can we achieve? So I think one of the things that holds VR back currently is its cost. The fact that it costs so much money to build a cave changes the things it's used for. And so my example, I did my master's at UC Irvine. The computer science building at UC Irvine was built so that they could remove an entire floor of that building to put a computer into. Because when they built the building, that's how big computers were. They were big, they were clunky, they were expensive. And when computers became cheap enough for consumers to use, you saw this huge boom in all kinds of technologies. And one of those would be video games. So while I don't think you're going to see a cave in someone's house anytime soon, I think you might see approximations of the cave. And when you start having approximations be a tenth the cost, a hundredth of the cost, then you could start see video games using this immersive capability that you see in the cave. And I think that's actually very exciting.
This recording was produced by Chris Bocast for the 2012 Emerging Interfaces Awards, sponsored by the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery.